Information-fueled, opinion-driven. This is the Dan Mandis Show, Super Talk 99.7.
WTN 206 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. It is the Dan Mandis Show, 615-737-9986. 615-737-WWTN. Pamela, I'm not sure if you saw the rather awkward exchange on American Idol the other night. Have you heard this story?
It's the story of
Benjamin Glaze. This is a 19-year-old guy. He's a cashier from Enid, Oklahoma, and he's auditioning for American Idol. Now, I did not see it, but we do have the audio, and I'm going to give you the headline right up front. I'm going to be willing to bet that this guy ends up winning American Idol, or at the very least, he's going to be America's sweetheart for a while, because Benjamin Glaze, at the age of 19 years old, has never kissed a girl. So then, of course, he goes on American Idol. He does his song. And
it's an audition, right?
It's an audition.
Yeah, and this is before he even did the song.
It's before he even did the song.
Yeah, he's introducing himself to the judges.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, now I'm confused because what happened is Katy Perry, unbeknownst to Katy Perry, and she's one of the judges, she calls him over and gives him a big kiss on the lips. And so for Benjamin Glaze now, this guy from Enid, Oklahoma, he's really upset because he was saving his first kiss for somebody special. And apparently that wasn't Katy Perry. Now, here's how this whole thing played out. Go ahead, Bill.
Have you kissed a girl and liked it?
No, I've never been in a relationship.
Really?
I can't kiss a girl without being in a relationship.
Come here, Benjamin.
Come here right now.
Uh-oh.
You can't
come
be.
Come here right now.
Come here. Stop.
Stop.
What, on the cheek?
Mm-hmm. You didn't even make the smush sound.
Right. Okay, let me start over. Okay.
She turns her head as he's.
So basically, what happened is she goes in for a kiss on the cheek.
He's kissing her on the cheek.
And she turns the head.
She turns her head, and he ends up planting it right on her lips.
Right.
And now here's what's interesting about that. Pamela, did you pick up on it too? And Belle, you did too. He's saying no. You can tell that he does.
Well, he's
not
reluctant because he did walk up to her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's reluctant.
But what is he supposed to do in that kind of a situation?
Yeah, because you're on national TV at this point.
And he starts hashtagging Me Too. What would anybody else do?
And he started, and listen, he was clearly, and he says, I was a bit uncomfortable, he said by phone this week after the incident aired on the season premiere. And so he says, you know, I wanted to save my first kiss for somebody special.
Right. And see, and that's why this story is interesting to me, because had it been a female,
yeah.
I mean, the whole excuse for some of this Me Too movement is, I felt uncomfortable. I didn't know what to do. If I didn't participate, I'd get fired. Well, see, in this situation, we clearly saw he felt uncomfortable. What is he supposed to do? He's standing in front of these three judges who are egging him on. What is he supposed to do? I mean, he's there to sing his song. He wants to be a star. He wants to be a musician. That's why he's there. He wants to be an American Idol. And they're egging him on, whatever the word is. And he doesn't know what to do. So he reluctantly goes up to her and says, kiss on the cheek.
Yeah.
And she says, sure. And he goes for it. She doesn't think it's enough. So he goes for it again to kiss her on the cheek. And then she lays one on him.
Yeah,
she
turns,
moves her head.
She turns her head knowing, because he just said it, knowing that he wanted to save his first kiss for somebody in a relationship. And so she kind of ruined it for him. I mean, she really did. And Pamela, to your point, you are, as always, absolutely right. Because if this was a guy who did this, then this guy would be lambasted. I mean, for the love of Pete, it's hosted by
Ryan Seacrest,
who's getting absolutely eviscerated by Hollywood and by a lot of folks in the media, too.
In fairness, Ryan's not in the clip. He's
No,
but the whole show is hosted by him. And so, I mean, it's got that taint of hashtag Me Too all over American Idol.
And accusations and so forth. Hey, Belle, can you play that clip one more time? I swear I heard this guy this guy from Enid, Oklahoma, Benjamin Glaze. I swear I heard him say no or something to that extent. But play it one more time if you could. Because I want to hear it.
Katie is the first.
Anyways, Benjamin.
How was it?
Oh, that's the aftermath.
Oh, that's the aftermath. Yeah, yeah.
Have you kissed a girl and liked it?
No, I've never been in a relationship.
Really?
I can't kiss a girl without being in a relationship.
Come here, Benjamin.
Wait, hold on.
See? Right
come
there.
Right
he said
now.
No.
Yeah, but then he walked up.
Come here.
I mean, he's walking up to the table.
No, I understand that. But for the record, he did say no a number of different times.
He didn't even make the smush sound.
Okay, let me start over.
And she turns. And he falls down.
He fell down?
Yeah, no, he backs off and falls. And yeah, because he did not want this.
Yeah, no, clearly he didn't want it.
He didn't want it.
He was obviously raped.
Okay, Bell, sometimes I need to take away your microphone. He wasn't obviously raped. But I would say for Katy Perry, you know, let's have some respect for somebody. You know, God forbid somebody in Hollywood and in that whole liberal elite class, God forbid they have any respect for good Midwestern values, which, you know, for this guy, Benjamin Glaze, Enid, Oklahoma, this is what he wanted to do. He wanted to save that first kiss for a relationship.
Right. And Katy Perry, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know that she ever came out with any accusations, but she was certainly out there supporting women who are a part of this Me Too movement. And so for her that was cute and sweet and all of that. And, you know, anybody else would go, okay, come on, dude, relax. But
chill out.
But in this case, in this climate,
right,
I see hypocrisy all over the place. Katy Perry, at this point, they should be calling for her head, for her to resign from the American Idol show. Because she clearly harassed him into doing something sexual that he did not want to do.
All right, now here's the
and so did Luke Bryan.
Here's the rest of the story. Mr. Glaze then asked for a drink of water, then delivered a lackluster audition, and was kindly rejected by the judges. So all he got was a kiss, and a lot of publicity. The kiss did result in his getting more screen time, which has helped to draw attention to his music.
Sure.
He says, so in that way, I'm glad she did it because it is a great opportunity to get my music out. And apparently he's also going to get a pass. When he returned home, Mr. Glaze worked through his feelings about the kiss by talking to his friends. They agreed with me that it didn't really count, he said. It was lip contact versus a romantic situation with someone you care about. That is what a first real kiss is.
This is the extremely, extremely light way of getting famous by making a sex tape.
Why do you encourage Bell? Encourage him.
It's a G-rated way to go.
He said he does not feel sexually harassed and is grateful to Ms. Perry for tweeting about him. I guess she tweeted about him as well. So anyway, there it is.
So he's still upset?
No, he's not upset. His music is getting out there, and people now know him.
All right, see?
We're talking
again,
about him.
Let's flip it. Women who have done what they had to do to get the movie role, the film role, the record contract, the songwriting contract, and suddenly then there's... Why is my phone is now recording everything I'm saying? Just suddenly. That was distracting.
Google's interested.
I mean, suddenly. Anyway, so, I mean, now that, flip it, women who have gotten record deals, again, movie deals, etc.
Right.
Who did what they had to do. Well, maybe it's not so bad. And then suddenly, well, 10 years ago, this is what happened to me. 20 years ago, this is what happened to me. He was uncomfortable with this, but now suddenly, well, I mean, if my music's out there, I guess it's okay.
Right.
I'm seeing all of this play right out in front of our faces, but flip it. If he were a female, they'd be calling for her to resign, just like they've been calling for Ryan Seacrest to step down when it was just an accusation. We got to see what Katy Perry did. Now, for the record, I didn't think she did anything wrong, and I think the young man should relax a little bit, but...
Yeah.
But in this climate, I mean, I see hypocrisy.
And Pamela, I understand what you're saying. But what I would also say is, I do think the guy needs to chill out a little bit. But that being said, he clearly said that he's never kissed a girl because he's never been in a relationship and he can't kiss a girl without being in a relationship. So she clearly knew, because he stated, I don't want to kiss anybody unless I'm in a relationship. And she knowingly ruined that. Here's the other thing. I'm also going to say this. She knew exactly, and they all knew exactly what was going on, because Luke Bryan led him into the conversation about, have you kissed a girl and you really liked it, which is a, you know, Katy Perry song. And so what did that come up randomly? Or, and I don't know this because I didn't see the entire thing. But what happens
is... it was probably
is,
in their, you yeah. know, their pre-interview. Because, I mean, they go through all this screening before they ever get before the judges.
Right. So they talk to
the producer had to have written it down somewhere that this is part of his story.
Right.
That he's actually never kissed a girl.
So, of course. This wasn't some spur-of-the-moment thing. So anyway, whatever. Well, I thought that the whole thing is unfortunate that Katy Perry took that away from him. Ultimately, though, he says it's okay because he got his own music. But you're right, in this whole... hashtag Me Too situation. And by the way, you bring up the whole Ryan Seacrest thing. I mean, that whole thing is still abhorrent to me. And I can't believe that there's still people without a shred of evidence still trying to call out Ryan Seacrest and get him to be fired from American Idol, which that is, of course, still a thing, too. So it's a whole infuriating conversation about what's been going on in Hollywood. By the way, speaking of which, Joy Behar, she has finally responded to Vice President Mike Pence. Now, we all know what happened. I'm going to play the audio for you. We all know that Joy Behar, what she basically did on The View, is she akin or she likened speaking to God or prayer or when God speaks to you as some sort of a mental illness. And so there was, of course, outrage, as there should be. And she was referring to Mike Pence when she made this comment on The View. And so, as I reported to you, as either earlier this week or last week, but she called up Mike Pence and she apologized to him. And the vice president, being the class act that he is, said, well, I appreciate and I accept your apology. But what you really need to do is you need to apologize to all the Christians across America that you so deeply offended. Now, I think there's a couple of different kinds of apologies. There's the, I am truly sorry for what I said. There's the, I'm sorry that you were upset by what I said. See, that's not an apology. I'm sorry if you're upset. But then there's the other apology, which is, I'm not going to apologize until I am basically forced to by social media and the vice president of the United States, which to me is exactly what Joy Behar did. Listen.
But I did encourage her. And I'm still encouraging her to use the forum of that program or some other public forum to apologize to tens of millions of Americans who were equally offended.
That's Mike Pence on Sean Hannity.
So I think Vice President Pence is right. I was raised to respect everyone's religious faith, and I fell short of that. I sincerely apologize for what I said.
Okay.
And that was it. I mean, how long ago was that comment made? I mean, it was at least several weeks. And so Behar, she had to be almost shamed into apologizing. So whether you accept her apology, whether you don't accept her apology, I think that people who were offended by the apology don't really are offended by the original comment. I think they take the apology with a grain of salt. Because if you have to be shamed into apologizing, then to me, it's not really an apology. You're apologizing because you feel like maybe your career perhaps is at stake.
And also the shaming took the effect of a shareholder on a shareholder's call.
Yes.
Asking Bob Iger directly.
Yep.
If he was okay with what happened.
Yeah, that's exactly
so
right.
That's an extreme. That's when the CEO is basically putting pressure on you at that point.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we did talk about that on Monday, too. So, you know, for Joy Behar, again, I take it for what it's worth. But for me, I don't accept that because I'm a Christian. I don't necessarily accept her apology. I don't not accept it. I just think that she is, quite frankly, so irrelevant to my life. And my own particular faith that it's not surprising that she said what she said. It is 2:20 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN.
I'm Pamela Furr, student walkouts all across the country. I'll have the latest while the accused shooter at that Parkland High School massacre is arraigned today. These stories and more at 2:30 on WTN.
226 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Dan Mandy Show, 615-737-9986, 615-737-WWTN. So Karen apparently is sending me a note on the Dan Mandy Show Facebook page. We're talking about this whole thing with this 19-year-old guy from Enid, Oklahoma that got that unwanted kiss from Katy Perry. She says, I watched the clip the other night with Katy Perry. She says, I don't feel that the kid made it clear he was saving his first kiss for someone special. If he had said that, then they never would have encouraged it. He played along, and he must have told the producers before because Katie and the other judges knew to bring it up. See, that's what I said. He did not act upset when he told his mom what happened. She gave him a high five. She says, I believe this is a case of making a mountain out of a molehill. Perhaps. You know, I just, you know, for me, and again, it's I haven't watched an episode of American Idol in years. Oh, by the way, I don't even know how to say this, Pamela, but I'll say it to you and no one else.
Okay.
So I'm just flipping through the channels the other night.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I stopped on? The Voice.
Okay.
And I sat there and I watched The Voice for, it had to be almost the entire episode. It's actually really good.
You've never watched it before?
No, I've never seen the Voice before in my life. And all of a sudden I was rooting for Blake Shelton, right? So because the whole thing, everybody turns around when they hear somebody sing. I was rooting for Blake Shelton to get more, you know, talent than the guy from Maroon 5, Adam Levine. Is it Adam Levine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I really like The Voice. It's really good. So I don't exactly know when it's on, but I'm ashamed to say I sat there and I watched it for almost the entire thing.
Does anybody remember that other show that they tried to do, and it was just convoluted? Josh Groban was the host. Brad Paisley was one of the judges. Ludacris. And I can't remember who else. But you were behind this wall, and it was like a screen. And as the person started singing, you then were able to like or dislike on your phone. And then you got so many likes, then the wall would start coming down.
Yeah, I seem to recall that.
That
but was just too
weird.
Confusing.
Yeah, very confusing.
Yeah.
It was weird. I don't even remember what the name of that darn thing was. It didn't last very long.
Well, you know, I'm not necessarily a big fan of, I don't even, what do you call that? That's not a reality show.
Well, those are talent competitions.
It's a talent competition.
Talent show, I would say.
Yeah, I've never been a big fan of those because I used to watch America's Got Talent religiously. These were years ago.
I've never been a fan of those, but I used to watch them.
Well, it was. Yeah, it is. It's okay. Anyway, so it was way back when Pierce Morgan was on America's Got Talent and David Hasselhoff and I think Sharon Osbourne on these folks. I loved it, but I used to get so angry, and I realized this is the reason why I don't like to watch and I don't want to start watching shows like The Voice and so forth, because the contestants that I really liked always got, you know, voted off the island or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so I just say, you know, I'm not watching this stuff anymore because it just ticks me off.
See, I never liked America's Got Talent because it was just a bunch of stuff. Jugglers and
That's what I loved
comedians
about it.
And I just, you know, for
there was
me,
a guy. There was a guy that like juggled fire. That was the last straw. When the dude that juggled fire lost, I was done.
Yeah, but the point is, I mean, how are you going to make money off of doing that unless you're just working Vegas? I mean, that's a Vegas or a Branson kind of thing.
I work in Vegas or Branson or, I don't know, some other
place. Well, anyway, so, yeah, Rising Star. Somebody just sent me what I was talking about was Rising Star. I liked American Idol when it first started, although they're around here, I will just tell you, around here, a lot of talented people were really ticked off because people were getting record contracts based on a talent show instead of working the bars, working the streets down on Broadway, actually going through what a lot of people had to go through to get their record deals.
Right.
They just sign up for a talent contest. Well, now it's, you know, that's basically how you get your deals these days or get recognized or these kinds of things.
It's shortcuts. It's shortcuts.
But when you're putting out talent like your Kelly Clarkson and then, of course, in country music, not only do you have your Carrie Underwood, but there's also, cute guy from North Carolina. Five more minutes. What is that kid's name? Shoot.
Five more. I know, but I love that song.
Yeah.
Can't
hold on.
Remember
who wrote it?
But the
Scotty McCreery. Good Lord.
Yeah, Scotty
McCreery. Anyway, Scotty McCreery, even though, and then you have Daughtry, who didn't even win. You had Jennifer, she won an Oscar for her performance was nominated. You had all of these people that didn't necessarily win the contest, but got recognized enough that they were able to get their own record deal through.
Isn't
all
there
of that.
A thing where the people who didn't win are the ones that are doing better than the actual winners?
In the last couple of years, that's when American Idol was on Fox.
Yeah.
That seemed to be the trend there. Did.
Yeah. And again, I've never liked these particular shows because I always got frustrated when my favorite contestants lost. But I will say what is interesting about the past couple of minutes is you saying that there are some folks within the country music industry who don't like the fact that folks.
When it first started. And in the, I wouldn't say just country music. I would say the Nashville music scene. I mean, it's more than just country, but a lot of the musicians and songwriters and, you know, you're looking at it going, what the hell, man? I have been, you know, busting my butt for 20 years. I can sing better than he can. And he's now getting all this national exposure deal.
Has that attitude changed now?
I think it has because you've got a different generation now that's here, and I think a lot of it has changed.
Yes.
And plus you embrace it. You embrace the changes and get work.
Well,
you embrace the changes and get your songs cut. You embrace the changes and, you know,
well, especially, and last thing I'll, because we're running way late, but the last thing I would say on this is too, because if within the realm of country music, if there's some folks that are, you know, upset about how some of these singers are getting contracts and so forth, but think about the attention that these folks, these contestants on these shows are bringing to country music. Anyway, we're late. 233 WTN. 238 Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Dan Mandis Show. 615-737-9986. The University of Minnesota. You know, I've got to tell you, I've stopped doing these stories because, honestly, I think we all know the lunacy in the colleges. But I did want to bring this one to your attention. From our friends at campusreform.org, it's all about the violence of whiteness. Can you imagine if anybody started talking about the violence of blackness? I mean, I'm just saying. The university has invited a professor dedicated to, quote, dismantling whiteness. Hey, Belle, could you do me a favor? Can you Google for me, or Pamela, Lisa Anderson Levy? I'm just curious, is she black or white? Because she is this woman that wants to dismantle whiteness, and she's also a
black woman.
Oh, she's black, aren't? She's saying that whiteness is an existential threat to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
She argues that whiteness is indeed that threat to social, political, and economic life in the United States. Now, what I'm trying to figure out, and oftentimes a lot of these different lecturers, they have these statements, and you try to understand in what reality they live in. How do you back up these statements that you make with something that people can really, truly understand? Or is it all just this collegiate babble? You know what I'm talking about? During her lecture, Anderson Levy is slated to speak on a number of issues, including the violence of whiteness and how colleges and universities in the United States may be complicit in perpetuating this violence. Now, I'm trying to figure out what violence she's talking about. I mean, I don't know. Because oftentimes, if you go to, you know, some of these inner cities, you got, you know, a bunch of black folks and they're gangs and they're shooting at each other all over the place. And oftentimes it's a bunch of young black males. I mean, that's not a racist thing to say. That's a fact, isn't it? I mean, you know, we're trying to figure out how to fix it. President Trump is trying to. But when you say the violence of whiteness, what does that mean? Now, when I talk about this collegiate babble, here's what I mean. Somebody see if you can explain this to me. She says this presentation explores the ubiquity and violence of whiteness and the ways in which academic institutions are poised to either reproduce or interrupt these discourses, writes Anderson Levy, referring to herself in the third person. She argues that whiteness poses that existential threat to social, political, and economic life in the U.S. and proposes that decentering whiteness is one of the most urgent social dilemmas of our time and demands our immediate attention. How is that an urgent social dilemma? See, this is what I mean when I talk about a collegiate babble. You know what I mean? It's like psychobabble, but it's like collegiate, you know, higher thought babble. I don't know. Anderson Levy will also speak on how college administrators can, quote, decenter whiteness at their... Hey, Bell, do me a favor and Google decentering whiteness and see what it comes up with, because I'm not exactly sure what it means. You know, it almost makes me want to fly out to the University of Minnesota just to hear this, to see if I can decipher what exactly it is that she's talking about. Anderson Levy will also speak on how college administrators can decenter whiteness at their institutions. You know, haven't they pretty much made anybody who's white and, God help us, a Christian male? Hasn't it very much been decentered anyway? Because not that it was ever centered, but we know that in colleges all across America, being white and certainly being male, that's a bad thing because of all the white privilege and all this other kind of stuff. We've been talking about white privilege for years now, folks. So I'd be pretty much agreeing in the sense that whiteness has certainly been decentered, if it ever was centered to begin with. But all this talk and all the attacks on college campuses of all of these accusations of white privilege, I would think that whiteness has certainly been decentered by now. Anyway. She says that they need to decenter whiteness. The colleges do, including their budgets, the curricula, the disciplinary genealogies, the interactions with students, and our relationships with each other as colleagues. And it goes on and on. And it makes you just, you know, I wonder if, I don't know if like marijuana is legalized in the fine state of Minnesota, but maybe if you smoke a couple of joints, maybe this actually would make sense to somebody who is high. But to me, it's just, you know, this is the kind of stuff that's happening at places like the University of Minnesota. And here's the other thing, just I'm wrapping this up. One of the other things that I would say is that this whole course, this whole lecture is part of a lecture series that are geared towards the fellow instructors. So they're teaching other lecturers and other instructors and other professors at the University of Minnesota to think like this, so that then en masse, all of these instructors and professors can then disseminate that to the students there at the University of Minnesota and certainly others as well. 244 on WTN. So I'm going to get a lot of reaction to my opening monologue about the 14,000 total shoes or 7,000 pairs of shoes that activists have laid out on the Capitol lawn to honor the lost lives to gun violence. And so one of the things that I said earlier, and I'll repeat this because there's a couple of different ways that you can look at this. By the way, the entire story, it makes for an impressive picture. It's on the Dan Mandis Show Facebook page, and it's all part of the media narrative. Now, what they did, and this is a global advocacy organization, AVAAZ, Avaz maybe? And they coordinated this display, and these 7,000 pairs of children's shoes, they are supposed to signify the 7,000 or so kids that have died thanks to, quote-unquote, gun violence. The 7,000 shoes in the Monument for Our Kids installment, they say, represent every child that was killed by gunfire since the deadly shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, in 2012. Now, some of these shoes were donated by families that lost their children to gun violence. And they have one guy by the name of Tom Mauser. He is very much somebody who is a anti-gun. And his son was killed in the Columbine School Massacre. He says, I'll be traveling to D.C. literally wearing my son Daniel's shoes, the ones he wore the day he died at Columbine. Also in attendance was Andy and Barbara Parker, whose daughter Allison was shot. You remember this, Allison Parker, she was shot on live television back in 2015 while doing that news report for the CBS affiliate station there in Roanoke, Virginia, WDBJ. But one of the things that you have to understand, because what we do here and what I do is we try and look at these stories and we try and give you more of a zoomed out view. Because when you look at what they're trying to do with this whole campaign is the 7,000 children's shoes and this advocacy group, along with the liberals, the Democrats, the mainstream media, the, you know, the gun grabbers and everything else, is they're trying to tie Newtown, Connecticut and Sandy Hook Elementary School and that horrific, horrific story with gun violence in schools, generally speaking. But then they're trying to tie that with this huge number of 7,000, quote unquote, children that have been killed thanks to gun violence. And my question is, OK, so are they really trying to make people think that there have been these mass shootings in schools since Sandy Hook? No. I mean, that's what they're trying to say, but no, we know that that's certainly not the case. There have not been 7,000 first, second, third graders that have been killed in mass school shootings since Newtown, Connecticut. Now, if you want to talk about what that 7,000 pair of shoes really signifies, yeah, it is some of those that were killed in mass shootings, like the one in Parkland, Florida. But you can also talk about the 16 and 17 and 15-year-old gangbangers who are shooting at each other in inner cities, in every city, all across America. We can talk about those folks who made poor decisions in life, some of those teenagers who decided that it would be a good idea to go out and sell drugs and shoot each other over drugs and essentially robbing, mayhem, and all this other kind of stuff. So, to me, what they're doing is they're diluting the bigger issue, because clearly we do have a problem with mentally ill people misusing guns. But we know that what they've been really doing is they've been not portraying the truth and not looking at the bigger picture when it comes to, quote unquote, gun violence. Because behind every violent episode of a gun, there's somebody, as we all know, pulling the trigger. So when they talk about these 7,000 kids that have died because of gun violence, well, you have to realize that the first, second, and third graders, they should not, and those killed in Parkland, in Parkland, Florida, they should not be lumped in with the gangbangers and the drug dealers and all that other kind of stuff, and the other kind of people who just happen to be under the age of 18 years old. You should not do that. So they're trying to paint this picture that these are all elementary school kids, and they're not. And I think that the American people are seeing through the lies that are being perpetrated by some of these folks that are, say, for example, putting this kind of display, 7,000, a total of 14,000 shoes, 7,000 pairs laid out on the Capitol lawn. The organization also said that some celebrities, of course, donated shoes as well, including Bette Midler, Susan Sarandon, Alyssa Milano, Chelsea Handler, you name it. So the question is this, because a lot of people, when on a day where students are walking out of school, I think they're all done now. They're supposed to happen at 10 o'clock all across America in each individual time zone. So the last school walkout has happened. The question would be, okay, so you tell us, what was accomplished by all of these walkouts today? You know, Michael Del Giorno's promo, I think, is he's talking about what he's going to discuss tomorrow. He brings up a great point. Everybody's walked out. But are the kids any safer? I would take that a step further. Are these kids who decided to walk out of school, are they any more educated on the problems that led up to the shooting in Parkland, Florida? The mental issues, the missed signs that the local and the federal authorities all completely missed. Are they updated on all of the various conversations regarding, quote unquote, gun control and how the policies of our federal government and these gun-free zones, how those policies essentially allowed this guy Cruz to walk into this gun-free zone with a gun and just shoot indiscriminately without any protection whatsoever? So they've walked out. But are they smarter? Are they more educated as to the problems that we have facing us here in America today? I would say no, they're not. Because we know that the schools, they are just absolutely infiltrated with political correctness. And they're infiltrated with people who are trying to do anything and everything they possibly can to curtail the Second Amendment rights of God-fearing, responsible gun owners here in America. But unfortunately, we all know that. And there's going to be a couple more as we move forward throughout the month. And then there's going to be one, I think it's on April 20th, which, if I'm not mistaken, is the anniversary of Columbine. So they got their exercise. But my question is, are they any more educated? I would say more than likely not, unless you, as the parent, have done the educating. It's 252 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. It's a couple of minutes ahead of 3 o'clock right here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. It is the Dan Mandis Show. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter at Dan Mandis Show. You can send me an email, Dan at 99.7WTN.com. And we covered a lot of ground today. Got a lot to cover tomorrow as well. But the conversation continues with Phil Valentine. He follows news, weather, and traffic next right here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN.